And welcome to Show People on the 10th Voice, and happy Pride Month to all my Show People listeners. I'm Michael Grayman Parkhurst, and here at Show People, we celebrate LGBTQ plus artists, theater artists, here in Kansas City and around the country. I am joined by my producer today, Fiona. How are you doing?
Great, and I'm wearing my Pride t-shirt.
I love your Pride. Will you describe your Pride t-shirt to us?
It is a exceedingly kawaii t-shirt because it has a ramen noodle bowl, but it has three kittens in it, and they are rainbow colored.
Rainbow colored. Love it. With a red bowl, a big red bowl of noodles. I love it.
Of noodle cats.
Noodle cats. Tomorrow, we celebrate our fathers, those that are still with us and those that we have lost. Tomorrow, we also celebrate Juneteenth. But today, I am here to celebrate with my husband. Andrew Grayman Parkhurst joins us today as our guest. Andrew was assistant to Tony Award-winning choreographer Rob Ashford on the Broadway production of Curtains. He was dance captain Swing on the Broadway tour of Mamma Mia for more than 2,000 performances, maintaining the production under the supervision of the original creative team. He had the honor of being directed by Roman Polanski in the original Vienna production of Tanz de Vampire, was chosen and directed by Alvin Ailey at age 16 to dance Memoria, and performed on the 2009 Tony Awards at Radio City Music Hall. Andrew has a BFA in modern dance from Texas Christian University, TCU, and is a current student in Wichita State University's master's program in arts leadership and management. Andrew is managing director of Kansas City's Spinning Tree Theater. Welcome to Show People, Andrew.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Fiona. It's so good to be here.
Happy Father's Day weekend to you.
And to you, too. Thank you.
You know, I know when I told you, Fiona, that I was going to have Andrew on as my guest, you asked if our five-year-old son, Sammy, was going to join us. And I immediately laughed. You know, introduce him to radio early. And I just laughed because our show would be, I don't know, 2 hours long, and we'd be dragging the mic away from him. So, you know.
Which is a better thing to be than sitting there totally silent or just saying yes and no when you're on for an hour and someone asks you a question?
Yeah.
True.
He would take to it like a duck to water, I'm sure.
He'd hold court.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be like, what does this do? Like, yeah, it would be.
And I feel I must point out to our visitors that there is a weird coincidence there, because I believe you're somewhat associated with Spinning Tree Theater as well.
I am, yes. I must tell you that I am one of the founding members of Spinning Tree Theater here. So, the founding artistic director of Spinning Tree Theater.
That's right.
In our 10th season.
Is that
finishing up our 10th season?
We lost one with the COVID,
pandemic, yeah.
Right.
Finishing our 10th season.
Yay! Congrats.
Yes. Andrew, you were born and raised here in Kansas City.
I was.
What is your earliest memory of falling in love with theater and dance?
Oh, in Kansas City, Starlight. Starlight Theater was so magical back in the day, and it still is. But this is the 70s, 80s, and my grandparents had what were called box seats, and everyone would dress up. I feel like, women would all wear dresses and men would all even wear suits and ties in the summertime. I might be making that up, but I think that happened. And it was such a special event to go to Starlight Theater. And I remember seeing productions of The Wizard of Oz and The Wiz and Ain't Misbehavin'. And at too young of an age, being oddly disappointed that Nell Carter was announced as not being in that evening's performance due to illness. I was probably like 9 or something, and I was crushed, but I still love the show. My grandparents would sometimes take me on their season tickets.
Because it's true, everybody used to come and perform at
Starlight Theater. Yeah. They were all stars. Everything was locally produced, and it was all stars. And I love the theater. I found it so magical. I could have watched any show there. And then I got to perform there when I was a teenager, so I did one summer. I auditioned in 84, and they did four shows, all locally produced, and I got cast in three out of the four shows. I was so lucky, and I got to work with incredible people doing
So you were there for a lot of the shows. Summer. This was
Yeah, and they'd hire, you know, directors, choreographers, music directors from New York, big name mm-hmm. people, and a lot of actors and designers from New York and all around the place. And then they have local people and local kids supplement each production, and it was an incredible training ground.
I remember there was one show that you were doing, I can't remember, was it Jesus Christ Superstar? Yeah. You were up on the roof. Didn't they have you guys like lined
up? That was
up?
Hair, actually. Yeah.
Hair, what am I talking about? Hair.
So yeah, I did, in 85, I did The Music Man, and I did Hair, and the kids, they decided would not be allowed to be on stage during Hair, because what a strange show to put a bunch of kids in.
Totally.
But then again, you know. So we were on the roofs on either side, like, I don't know what they call those technically, but that go over the walkways, the sidewalks, when you
seats,
come
right.
from like concession down to your seat. So they had scaffolding built, and we would climb up for our numbers, and it was so, it seems now so reckless and dangerous, but it was so much fun. I loved it.
Where did you get your start, even before all this? You know, how did mom find the place where you started training?
Yeah, so I did, in 1981, I was nine, and it was the summer of the Hyatt Skywalk collapse. Mm. And that night I was doing a performance not far. There was a community theater through Kansas City Parks and Rec called Theater Under the Stars, I think.
Okay.
And it was in a variety of places, but at that time it was on the campus of the old Penn Valley Community College, which is now one of the metropolitan community colleges there on the north side. And they would build a stage in the summer, and I got to do Music Man. And the choreographer, a woman named Annie Whiteside, gave me a solo, a short dance solo in Shapoopy, and I just loved it. And I had never really danced before, but she spoke with my mom sometime during the process and said, you know what, he might have a bit of talent and or interest in dance, so if that's something that you think he might be interested in doing, it was. So she found classes for me, and that's where that all took off.
And where were some of those classes? Where did you take
some
of
those classes? I took at American Dance Center,
right,
which was founded on the Kansas side of the state line by Dennis and Kathy Landsman, who were very strict. She was a very strict ballet teacher, and they had done Broadway, and they had done lots of stuff. They were excellent teachers. And ballet was never my favorite thing. Mm-hmm.
I
took ballet. Right? I feel like I took ballet like 4 to 5 days a week, mm-hmm. Along with other classes. And I oftentimes didn't enjoy it, didn't feel comfortable in it. But I had the sense that, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old, that I needed the technique mm-hmm. in order to do what I wanted to do, which was musical theater dance.
I think so many boys don't necessarily always start with ballet.
Right.
I mean, it's so important. It is the basis of everything.
Yeah.
Do you remember with jazz as well, or was it really just...
I did a little jazz and tap combo class at Miller Marley, mm-hmm. Shirley Marley's studio, Miller Marley School of Dance and mm-hmm. Voice, it's called now. And then I did... You know, we had like a flamenco class and a pantomime class at American Dance Center, and a character class and a modern class mm-hmm. we could take when we were older. The modern started to appeal to me more than the ballet, but I kept on the ballet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The American Dance Center, that's not around anymore.
They moved, Dennis and Kathy moved, I think, to Las Vegas
right.
and they signed it over to former students who were a couple. Someone told me the other day that it had closed, but I don't know that by fact. So
it was a good place to study.
It was a great place to study. And it was on the opposite town of Kansas City Ballet.
Okay.
So it was good for that geographical demographic.
Were there opportunities to study with the Kansas City Ballet back
there
then
would
too,
have,
for public kids?
There would have been.
Yeah,
I just think it would have been a much further drive.
Yeah.
It would have been probably a much bigger commitment.
Right.
As it was, I kind of struggled to focus, I think, in those classes. And I just wanted to do theater, you know, especially once I got that first taste. And I think they, especially Kathy Landsman, really was interested in me doing ballet. Mm-hmm. They wanted something for me that I didn't want for myself. And I knew I needed the technique, but that I wasn't going to go down that avenue. Mm-hmm. So it was a bit of a clash, but it's all good.
Do you think it was because they needed extra males to balance out performances, or do you think it was because they could see that you could be good in it?
That's a very good question, and I don't know the answer. I think there were only two of us guys in the classes, so I think that that's very highly possible. And I think I frustrated them because I do think that they saw talent, but I think I just didn't want it. I just didn't want to do the ballet for life. It just seemed like not...
You can't practice and rehearse properly if you don't really want to do it, because your heart's not there. You'd be miserable.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's always less boys in dance class, and that's just, I mean, I think even today there's more, but I mean, back then when we were younger, there was much less.
Our culture thinks that if males dance, then they will be less manly, and perhaps not even able to find suitable mates, and it's like,
there's nothing to it.
Yeah, and they need to maybe perhaps have that solo dance at the start of their wedding. At least teach people the rudiments and let them see if they like it. It's not going to break them for life.
Right.
No.
And they'll be more nimble on the football field.
Exactly.
Yeah, we would have a few guys come and go throughout the years at American Dance Center, but it was always me and Jeff Curtis. We were like the two guys, and he was very serious about it and a very good student. And I just remember trying to make the kids laugh when she turned her back, you know, because it was so intense. And sometimes my reaction if things get so intense and so serious is to make people laugh. I just need to break up that intensity sometimes.
You have to. I started on Graham Technique at the Cincinnati School for Creative Arts when I was 10 years old, which is such a strange thing to start when you're so young. Yes. And of course, it was so disciplined. So you have to laugh.
Yes.
Tell me about, I want to go back to Starlight a little bit, and then we're going to take a quick break in a couple minutes. What do you remember learning the most during your experience? Because you probably could be in there for some of the rehearsals or part of that. What stuck with you?
I remember loving witnessing, watching the rehearsal process. And the director of most of the shows I did there was named Jack Allison. And he was such a serious director of musical theater. And I remember one day during rehearsal for one of the shows, I was sitting with a couple of the other boys and we were laughing and being loud. And he shouted at us to keep it down. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you what, I don't think I ever was told that in another rehearsal in my career, because I didn't want to let him down, but I also didn't want to distract in that way. Mm-hmm. And I just remember loving watching the process of him directing, of Helen Butler off the choreographer choreographing, of all of these adult artists doing what they did and creating a show where there wasn't anything except on the page. I just was so excited about that and to be a part of it.
You probably just wanted to sit there all the time and soak all of that.
Yeah, and I talked to the actors and the people that did the shows, Paul Williams and Joanne Worley and Nicolette Sheridan, rest in peace. She sang that song, Gonna Take a Lot of Love. She was Mary Magdalene and Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh my God.
I soaked it all in. I loved it. It was a great training.
You have to. We'll be right back with Andrew Grayman Parkhurst right after this. And we are back with Andrew Grayman Parkhurst. Thank you for being my guest today on
of
Show
course.
Fables.
How could I say no to you?
It's nice talking to my husband today. I always like to ask people, you know, who encouraged us along the way. About a year and a half ago, I was lucky enough to have my mentor, the awesome Luther Goins, as my guest on Show People. He was calling in from his home, Chicago. And he was the one that kind of mentored me, inspired me at the School for Creative and Performing Arts. Who encouraged you as a young artist, even a parent, supported you, told you you should, you know, go and do this?
My mom was very supportive. My grandmother was very supportive. And then I think it was just individuals on different events and experiences. Like I mentioned, the choreographer of that, the Music Man, Annie Whiteside in 1981. That was just to have someone believe in you. And then through each production, it feels like there was a person or two mm-hmm. that saw my worth and helped me get in touch with that. So I wouldn't say that there's like one teacher or director. It was just such a village of people along the way, many of whom didn't know each other, didn't interact with each other, that just touched me and inspired me. And I'm still having that with the people I'm working with now. So it's a collection.
It is. I think I can say for both of us that we were born to do this. I don't think there was ever a time where we made a decision, oh, we're going to do this. I don't think we even found out that Cincinnati had a performing arts school until I was in the fourth grade, because I started in the fifth grade. And I think family friends told us, and they were like, maybe you should have Michael go audition. But I was interested in the arts before that. It was just finding that place.
Yeah.
When did you decide, because you, when you were graduating, you decided to go to Texas Christian University for modern dance. What drew you to TCU?
TCU had the very first program in modern dance at a university in the country, founded by a woman named Jerry Bywaters Cochran. And they had produced some really exquisite dancers. I wanted to do musical theater, but I also knew that the dance life would be the shortest part of that career. So I wanted to exploit that to the fullest. Right. And I had friends, at the time at least, TCU, the Kansas City area, there were a ton of kids that went to TCU from the Kansas City area. The
Still
recruiting
do.
Is very strong from this regional center. And the dance program was so strong, but also it's a strong liberal arts university. And I wanted that. I didn't want to be, you know, ignorant as an artist. I wanted to be an educated person and also have top arts. So that's how I ended up at TCU.
And they didn't even have a musical theater program at the time, I don't think.
They did not. I met with the chair, and we kind of decided on a program for me where I could do, because they wanted guys again. And especially in a university dance department, right. Often telling students, like, if you're a strong dancer and you're choosing musical theater or dance, do consider the dance route, because you will be treated like gold. Because you are needed. You're needed for performances. You're needed for many things. And that way, they let me study voice throughout. Mm-hmm. I could switch some electives and some classes so I could take acting.
Okay.
And then the degree was either going to be ballet or modern dance. And ballet required a lot of dance history courses, which did not interest me at the time at all. And the modern dance degree incorporated a lot of composition courses, choreography courses, right. And that's what I loved. So that's how I picked the modern dance. But we studied, I should say, ballet throughout the program. Every semester I studied ballet. We had like 9 a.m. classes every day, hour and a half modern class, and then you went into the rest.
All day.
Oh, yeah. You know, your classes until 4 or 5, and then rehearsals start.
And it still has one of the strongest dance programs in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Some of your mentors were great dancers and choreographers from the kind of mid to the late 20th century. I mean, who were some of your mentors there?
The timing was just so lucky because there was an opening in the modern dance faculty while I was at TCU. And what they did, they had the good instinct to bring in kind of masters of modern dance per semester. So we had Brenda Daniels, who became a good friend, and she was considered the quintessential teacher of the Cunningham technique for Merce Cunningham. We had Holly Williams, who became a good friend, who was a Mark Morris dancer. Mm-hmm. We had Bruce Wood, who came in. He had been with Twyla Tharp. Mm-hmm. We had David Hochoy come in, who was Martha Graham's last rehearsal director before she died. Mm-hmm. And he was super tough, and I learned so much from David Ho Choi. He's still running Dance Kaleidoscope in Indianapolis.
Right.
We had Gus Solomons Jr. come in, who was an MIT grad, that you know, architect slash choreographer. We had the Chuck Davis African-American Dance Ensemble come frequently for master classes. So it was just it was ridiculous. And the university, being so well funded, was able to make these artists happy. And in addition to those very, very famous in modern dance artists, people would come in from all over the country. Cleo Parker Robinson would come in, Jan Urquhart from Chicago, and mm-hmm. names that only modern dance people would know. But people from everywhere would come in and do a class or a week with us, and it was so enriching.
And Li Cho Cheng was your ballet.
He had been a teacher with, he was from Central Beijing Ballet, China. He had joined Boston Ballet as a principal teacher, and he wanted to start a family. He moved to Fort Worth, and they got him at TCU as one of the ballet instructors, and he was incredible. And it's interesting, like, naming off the names, and I'm doing so, I think, to remember and to honor all Absolutely. Of these teachers. This is why I have such high standards in the work I do today. And you kind of go back through these people, and you're like, gosh, but I didn't even think they were mean at the time. I just thought they know what they're doing. They're confident in their knowledge, and they're artists, and I want to get some of that. I want to learn from them. So I'm going to quiet my mouth, open my ears, be present in the room, and try to take some of that, like a yes. sponge from them.
Because they wanted to get the work done. They were about the work. They were yeah. about focusing in. Yeah. So anything, it was more discipline. It more came from the other, like, let's just kind of skip the rest, and let's mm-hmm. just kind of get to what it needs to mm-hmm. be.
And really, truly, a weeding out of anyone or anything that didn't belong. There was, you know, from conservatory, thing like from day one that was, TCU wasn't a conservatory per se, but the dance department was run very much like yes. one, plus the liberal yes. arts education. But it was very much that, like, if you're not strong enough to do this, that's fine. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do it. And I think that just built, you know, for me, tremendous strength and resilience and grit. And that's just sort of occurring to me as I'm going mm-hmm. back through some of these memories.
I think when we were in school, you really were sort of trained to listen to your teachers and sort of take in what mm-hmm. they're giving you. Yes, surely you can question things too, mm-hmm. but you know that they're the people that have, they're the experts or the people that have been around for a while too. You just kind of...
Well, yeah. It's like David Ho Choi. He was Martha Graham's rehearsal director.
Right.
And he was tough. And I loved that.
And also, Martha Graham was tough.
And Martha Graham right. was tough. Right. And he loved that. Right. And it's not that everything is rosy and positive, but it's art, and it's really hard and challenging and complex and nuanced. And you're either up for that, I think, or you're not up yeah. for it. And I'm grateful that whatever in my composition, I was up for that, because it was just mind-blowing being in the room with all those artists.
There was something that you created when you were at TCU that's a benefit, an organization that was created when you were one of the founders. Can you tell us what that was?
Yes, I this is a good show to mention that on. I don't often get the chance to talk about that. I actually co-founded, this was 92, I graduated in 93 from TCU, TCU's first... It was called at the time, it's history, people. It was called the Gay, Lesbian, and Bisexual Student. It was allies, it was faculty and mm-hmm. students together, and we mm-hmm. had meetings about it. And there was, I remember 1992, 93, there was even a little kickback, and some people weren't sure that the bisexual component should have been included in that. It's very different now, but with a friend, we co-founded this student organization, which, you know, people, you know, very much thought TCU was a maybe a rigid Christian
University.
It's called mm-hmm. Texas Christian University. However, that meant you had to take a semester of religion.
Mm-hmm.
Many of my friends in the dance department took Wiccan as their religion. I couldn't take that class. I wanted to, but it conflicted with other stuff.
Oh, that's a shame.
But know, that's right? That. And I had a friend who, there used to be a payphone in the lobby. Now it's a beautiful space. It's all redone. But there was a payphone in the lobby, and my friend Lisa used to answer the phone, and she'd say, TCU, Department of Ballet and Modern Dance, Dancing for Jesus, how may I help you? And we would all just put our hands over our mouths and laugh, and people would call and ask about your liturgical dance program, and I worked to earn a little extra, get, you know, money in the dance office, and I fielded many calls from people who wanted to know about that and would have to explain to them, this isn't that program, but we knew where to send people if they wanted a liturgical dance program. Yes. Back to your question. So after co-founding that organization, with another friend, I developed an AIDS benefit concert for Tarrant County, which is where Fort Worth, Texas lies. And it was an AIDS benefit concert between the two organizations. Chi Tau Epsilon mm-hmm. is a dance honors society that I was president of my senior year. And then there's a theater, similar one. And we did an evening of performances, students and faculty and the like. They're still doing it. And it's something, and it's, I'm going to get it wrong, but it's in like its 26th year or something like that. And I got to go down several years ago and wave at people and say I helped make this a long time ago.
Amazing.
That was cool.
And it's so awesome that it's still running and that you got to see it still existing and helping people.
Yes.
A lot of people don't get to see that. Things don't have the longevity. And I love that you included bisexual people, because even now there's a lot of erasure.
Absolutely.
And negative stereotypes and myths about bisexual people in mm-hmm. our community, when we mm-hmm. should be supporting each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it was, you know, at the time we were like, well, how are we going to get support from faculty? But the head of the, you know, the chapel, I mean, the faculty and staff, they were tremendously liberal with a capital L. They were just so intelligent, so published, and so great. And they were very supportive of that initiative. I don't know what that looks like right now at TCU, but it's an honor to have had something to do with that. I'm sure it's much broader and much more organized and all of that. But that was a start.
That's really incredible. That is still going. And is that a yearly?
Yeah,
the concert.
Yeah, they do it every year.
Amazing. So you said you were able to study some acting and voice. Is that how you were able to combine your love of modern dance with your love of theater?
Yeah, I did shows. I'd go and do summer stock in the summer sometimes, and I would do school musicals, school voice recitals, of course all the dance concerts. I just did as much as I could in all three disciplines.
Throughout your years at TCU, were you always saying, I'm going to do musical theater? Or was there actually this, was there anybody that there was like saying, you can go in this direction?
So I think I thought it was going to be musical theater or modern dance, mm-hmm. and I wasn't really sure. And I worked with, in Summerstock, with a director who's named Stephen Pickover, and he's still a director at the Metropolitan Opera. And I remember Stephen telling me, it's really not your job to decide that. The industry will place you where you're needed. So your job is to prepare and to audition. You can't control it. And then you'll go with it. You'll see what happens. But I did have, the summer before my senior year, I got to go to American Dance Festival in Durham, North Carolina, on the campus of Duke. And I got a scholarship. I was a young artist scholar at ADF. And it was a big deal. And you went and you auditioned for all these incredible, again, modern dance pioneer. I mean, my teachers included Donald McHale and Stuart Hodes, who was one of Martha Graham's partners. I read that he was the only partner she would ever look at in the eye on stage.
Really?
Because she didn't trust people, apparently. James Sutton was my ballet teacher, and then an incredible artist who you got to meet, mm-hmm. Michael, when we were on tour with Mamma Mia, Daniel Nagrin, mm-hmm. who was a solo artist and just a legend. Mm-hmm. And that was a composition class excuse me, my class with Stuart Hodes was a composition class. Daniel taught a class called Acting Technique for Dance Performance, which I thought was the coolest thing I could ever. And apparently they didn't end up running the class many more summers because there wasn't an interest in it. I couldn't believe that it wasn't packed.
Well, I can't either. Yeah.
I thought, that is so cool. And he was so strong and so tough and so loving, but such tough love. And in it, with his Stuart Hodes composition course and Daniel's course, I created a solo to a song from the 50s, a Johnny Rice song. Uh-huh. Go On and Cry.
Yeah.
And I created that and I auditioned and I got to do it in the student performance at the end of the 6-week American Dance Festival. And Linda Hodes was one of the teachers. She used to run the Paul Taylor Studio and school in New York City.
Okay.
And she was another big one. And she offered me a full scholarship just face to face to the Paul Taylor Studio after seeing the solo. And so that's when, you know, as a young person, when you get feedback like that, that's when you go, holy gosh, she thinks right. I have right. something, like, okay, I better investigate that. Mm-hmm. I better go down that road and look at that and see what's there and see how it feels. So I did that piece. I did it at the American College Dance Festival, right. and they let me do it at TCU on the faculty concert. And then the week before is a little dramatic. The week before I graduated college, my knee went out.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So I had, panic stricken, calling my parents and them flying down and receiving my diploma, my BFA in modern dance on crutches and in a knee immobilizer in a tremendous amount of pain. And then having the operation, medial meniscal removal, and having the doctor say, you probably aren't going to dance as a career. Well, we proved him wrong. That set me back for a little bit. I still moved to New York because I knew, he said, you probably had to wait like a year or so. But I thought, if I don't move to New York, if I go back to Kansas City where I'm from and sit for a year and start, if I get started in the theater scene there or what have you, I'm not going to go to New York. So I'm going to go to New York.
So you knew you were going to move to New York before the accident
happened. Yeah, I had planned on it, yeah.
And then making this choice. At that point, were you thinking, I'm not going to go the dance company route when you did move to New York? Or were you just kind of like, all right, I'm going to go and I'm going to see what happens?
I was concerned because of the doctor's, message to me after the operation when I met him. But I went to New York and I temped and I worked and I earned money. And then I took a couple classes at Paul Taylor Studio, but I just couldn't make it. My knee just couldn't make it through the classes. And so that was humbling. But I went back to that Stephen Pickover director friend thing about the industry will place you where it needs you. Just be open, be available, work on your craft. And so I was able to do musical theater and to do a lot of it and for the most part without showing signs of an injured knee.
Did that make you not being able to get through the classes, did that make you start looking at backstage or start going into the, I mean, you were probably going to do both at the same time.
Absolutely.
Who did you know in New York when you moved there? I mean, as far as like, they always sort of say, I went to New York, I had, $10 in my wallet and I didn't know anybody. Who'd you know?
That's a great question. Michael Sheeman is a director. I think he's West Coast now. But he was a friend, and I had done Summer Stock with him that same summer at Stephen Pickover. And I knew him, and there was a friend named Susan Grace, who's still on the West Coast. She's an actor. And I had several friends, from Summer Stock and all that. And I even remember going to one audition and seeing a guy named Tom Warren at the audition for like a Broadway show, and I was like, oh my God, Tom Warren, you won't remember me, but in 1984, in 1985, we did Starlight Theater together, and I was a kid, and you were, and then I kind of learned not to do that to people, especially at an audition. Sorry, Tom Warren. I didn't mean to make you feel bad. I just thought it was so cool. But yes. No, we became friends, and he was like a bartender at Broadway theaters.
Yes.
I'd see him when I went to see shows and saw all the shows I could see, auditioned for everything.
Who was your first roommate?
I stayed with Michael Sheeman on his apartment on the Upper East Side for a few weeks, and then I just kind of moved around.
Uh-huh,
and I lived with a couple named Rob and Jim in the West Village for a while. And then I moved to Long Island City, Queens, with my friend Brenda Daniels, who was the Cunningham teacher. Right. And I lived at her apartment for quite a while. I have a great friend in New York named Teresa Fisher. She's from Kansas City, actor, singer, cabaret performer. And I would stay with her in between. I'd go out of town to work a lot, and so I didn't maintain an apartment. The one time I signed a lease on an apartment, I ended up getting a show. That took me out of the country for a while. So I was like, well, that's not meant to be.
Just hop around.
Yeah.
And temping is what we did. I don't know if temping is what people still do, but temping was the thing to do as an actor. That and wait tables, but temping could be a little bit more flexible. Often you could sort of be excused to go to an audition and come back. And
yeah, temp jobs, people always know that they're short lasting, so they don't mind making time for you to go to interviews for other temp jobs or, in this case, auditions and things.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So much less painful and struggle than if you've got a permanent job that they expect you to be dedicated to.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I oddly enjoyed a lot of my temp jobs, and I think part of it was I found it a great motivator to audition well. Because, like, getting up at 7 whatever in the morning and putting on a... I'm sure people don't all have to do that now, but we had to wear a tie. And, you know, it's hard. Mm-hmm. And 9 to 5 and sitting at a desk and being an executive assistant or what have you, it motivated me to look at that backstage, find those auditions, do well at the auditions. And then I remember I had done my longer term temp job was when I first moved to New York, and it was for Prudential Securities in the financial district. And I was assisting a couple of vice presidents who were dealing in special accounts, which was accounts of $10 million and up. They were a hoot. And I think they liked me too because it wasn't my world and I didn't really care about it. Right. And I didn't want in it.
You were like, when's the next audition?
Yeah, I was like, I'm not here for this. I'll do whatever. I will learn whatever you have me learn. I will count whatever receipts you want me to count. What do you need me to do? But I'm not trying to get a job here. I'm not ambitious in your office. And I maybe they found that. I don't know. But I remember telling them, like, I have to go because I got a job. Oh, what are you doing? Is it here in New York? And I was like, no, I'm doing it's my first professional job. I'm going to do a dinner theater production of Meet Me in St. Louis in Ohio. And just laughter. So that keeps you grounded, doesn't it? Because
I've got this job.
It was great. And the guy that directed and choreographed that production, Tony Stevens, was
hello, he's Tony another Stevens.
One. And he was Bob Fosse's right-hand man for many shows. Actually, the character of Mike in A Chorus Line is based on Tony's life. At the same time, there was the musical Chicago, not the current hit revival, but the original that didn't run long.
That's right.
Tony had to make a choice. He chose to work on Chicago. Chicago closed soon after that. He had nothing to do with The Chorus Line. So that was Tony. Tony was a wonderful, just a great mentor. So that was my first job. Dinner Theater, Ohio. Meet Me in St. Louis. The trolley ran over my foot at one performance as my mom was driving up to see me, and I had to be out of several shows because the wooden or cardboard, whatever it was, trolley, I guess it wasn't cardboard, Michael, it ran over my foot. So we have humbling.
These are not the first couple injuries. I mean, he has several more.
That's overseas.
Why I'm sore now. Oh, my gosh. All right, so... Dinner Theater. Yeah. What are some other things that you got? Or was some of the other highlight jobs?
I did a tour of Chicago, which was like a pay your dues, like a non-equity pay your dues tour, staying in hotels that the heat wasn't on in the middle of a, you know, Canadian winter.
Moving every day.
One-nighters where you'd go from the bus to the theater without having a dinner, and you were like, oh, okay. Pay your dues stuff. I did get to come home and do some shows at New Theater. I got to come home in 2000 and and Starlight. I did a couple shows at Starlight as an adult, a professional equity performer, which was so cool.
So you actually got to be on the stage instead of up in the garden.
On the roof. I did, and yes, it was the first summer that they had the big garage door with the air conditioning behind it, so it was very fancy.
When I was at high school, they never let the performers up in the gods, but as stage crew, we were sent up there all the time, and one of the bits to put the lights up, we had to walk across this tiny thing that was about 2 feet wide with no handrails in the ceiling of the Great Hall at school. It was like the walkway for the Imperial Death Star with the same sort of plunge beneath you.
Wow.
Yeah, terrifying.
Where was this, Fiona?
In England.
Ah! I'm sure they've tidied that up since.
Yes, I'm sure Imperial Health and Safety has been by, just like in the Death Star.
That's changed.
Chicago. Okay, so there's a show that we actually met on that you had done. West Side Story.
And you
had a history with it. The West Side Story. What was your first West Side Story?
My first West Side Story was at North Shore Music Theater in the Round, just outside of Boston. Beverly, Massachusetts.
Right.
And that was my first of five West Side Stories.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I did five of them. And I did one at Tennessee Repertory Theater with the Nashville Symphony.
You got to record
that. We recorded that for the Naxos label. That's recorded. I did the Kansas City Starlight one. And then I did one in Germany. That was an infamous production with an American director, who brought over about 10 Americans, and we performed in Augsburg, Germany.
And that was. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's right.
That was, yes, we forget about that one sometimes. That was that's a whole other hour's show, but we won't.
Have to hear that story
let's
sometime.
Pass over that one. And then we did, and then where I got to meet you, Michael, was on the 40th anniversary European tour of West Side Story.
We met in Milan, Italy, which is always kind of fun where people ask us.
Sounds really romantic, as opposed to Ohio or something. Not to knock Ohio.
Not to knock Ohio. That's my home state. Yes.
Ohio.
No, it's, we did. And we weren't a couple then, but we did meet in Milan, Italy. I came, that tour took you to so many different places.
Berlin. Well, we rehearsed in Berlin. We opened in Zurich. We played Vienna. We played Milan. We played Frankfurt, all in about 6 months. So it was barely a tour. And then we'd have like a week off between cities where we could go on trains and visit towns. And it was incredible. And Michael had just finished the 40th anniversary Broadway tour. So they talked him into coming to Milan. What they do, call you and say.
They just called and said, do you want to come to Italy?
Sure.
You want to come for a month? Literally, it was, I think it was 2 weeks in Milan, a week off, and then a week in Frankfurt. So it was incredible. We will be right back with Andrew Grayman Parkhurst. And welcome back to Show People on this Father's Day weekend, Juneteenth weekend. And we are celebrating Pride Month, and I'm celebrating by having my husband on today.
Oh, that's a sweet idea. Happy Father's Day, Michael.
Happy Father's Day. So we were in Europe. Yeah, so it was pretty amazing because I hadn't been to Italy before. And I got to meet so many wonderful people. I was a swing, which just basically means I'm covering a bunch of different roles, which I had done on the 40th anniversary, and they needed someone last minute. So I think I maybe went on only once or twice that whole time. So for me, it was like, cool, I get to see Italy. We even took a day trip to Verona.
We did.
Two gentlemen of Verona.
Yes, right. Absolutely.
Two gentlemen in Verona.
That's right.
Two gentlemen in Verona.
That's right. Yeah. We were friends, and we went with friends, and it was cool, and we saw the Romeo and Juliet stuff. Yeah.
And it's such a picturesque, I mean, I'm sure it's just as like clean. It really kind of is so clean, it looks like you're on like a Hollywood back lot. It's
a cool place.
Stunning. Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous.
Yeah.
Tell me, because you stayed over a little while. What's the next show that you auditioned for while you were?
Yeah, so when we were in, when we were playing the West Side Story Euro tour in Vienna, I called the local theater, the big state-funded theater there, and I asked if there were any auditions. Well, actually, I asked if I could audition for Chicago, because I saw that Anne Reinking was in town doing auditions for Chicago, the Broadway revival in Vienna. A lot of times, at that time at least, shows would open like New York or London, and then they would go, their next European stop would be Vienna. And they said, well, sorry, but she's finished. She's flying home today. She just finished the auditions yesterday. However, there's another show that you can audition for if you want, the Tanz der Vampire. And I had seen the show because it was in its first season. And the show at the big theaters there, they run like fall, like a school year, like fall through the end of spring, and then they take summer off. And so they said, you can audition for that if you want. And I was kind of like, okay, I had seen it. I didn't think that there was probably anything in it for me. But I showed up to the audition, as
it,
did.
I should say, it translates to Dance, Dance of the Vampires, right?
Yeah, Dance of the Vampires. Yeah. It is based on Roman Polanski's film, The Fearless Vampire Killers, or Pardon Me, But Your Teeth Are in My Neck.
Which have you seen that, Fiona?
I haven't.
It's a very funny movie.
Sharon Tate is in it, and it's very funny.
You showed up at the audition.
I showed up at the audition, as did most of the cast of the European tour of West Side Story. And somehow, and then we went to Frankfurt, and I got a phone call in the hotel, and it was Vienna calling saying, we'd like to offer you the job. And I was like, what? So... yes, of course. And then I went back. That's when I went back to New York, got rid of the apartment, moved out of that apartment that I had leased.
You did have a chance to get back to New York. Okay, right.
And I was there for a month or two. And then I went back to Vienna and I lived there for a year at that time doing that show without leaving.
What was it like being in a foreign land? Again, different from being on tour where you're around people, actually living in a foreign land and doing a show in a foreign language.
Well, I think it's many things. I think it's complex. I think, you know, you can romanticize it. It was certainly, it was an incredible opportunity. Mm. I love the show. I loved the theater. Mm. I love the city, so much about the city. There's darkness there too, you know, and then there's loneliness. There's being apart from your culture and your family and your friends for that long. So it had many things to it. It was a complex kind of a time, but I got to be in this incredible show that was all the music was by Meatloaf. So, but it was all in German. And, you know, I hired a tutor and I tried to learn German and I found it so hard. I had never taken any German before. I had taken French, which was no help in Vienna. And the people there, I mean, they wouldn't always, in Vienna at this time, they wouldn't always want to practice your German with you. Mm-hmm. So it's more like when they see that you're American, they're like, you're American, I speak English better than you speak German, we're doing English.
Right.
I'm like, I'm trying to practice.
Let me practice.
So that was a thing. But doing the show was incredible. Mm. It was, you know, the arts there, state funded. And I remember once I had a cold or something and the theater sent me into a doctor's office. And I tell you, it was like doctor, lawyer, artist. Like the doctor's office was like, you're going in before everyone else. What do you need? What can we do for you? The theater was like, come back whenever you want. Like people would get sick and they'd take off 3 weeks because they had a cold and you'd still get paid. And I was just like, no. I want to, they're like, why did you come back? I'm like, because I'm fine. And this is what I do. This is what I love to do. I want to be here doing this.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting, cultural exchange in that way, but so enriching to be in a different culture with a different language, with different customs. And I would recommend that to everyone and to every artist, especially because you learn so much about what you don't know, which I think is key.
Even get out of your comfort zone a little bit and immerse yourself in of course, a beautiful city.
Yes.
And it's a big, big show.
It was a huge show. It was a huge show.
Yeah. Yeah. And who was starring in that one?
There was a man, rest in peace, named Steve Barton,
right.
Who was the original Raoul in Phantom of the Opera. and I had seen him in many Broadway shows, and he was a dear, he was a love, and he's no longer with us, but he was phenomenal.
That's what you've said.
On stage and off.
How is Roman Polanski as a director?
Exacting. So I didn't get to work with him as much as the first season. The first season people, he had, for season two, his assistant, Francesca, came back and did most of that work in preparing season two. He came toward the end of that, and then he came back a couple times to see the show. But I heard plenty of stories, and I had nothing but respect for him artistically because he knew what he wanted. Mm-hmm. He would walk throughout the Mosca. So musical theater is kind of, it's based on the system of opera in the German-speaking countries, in that there's a Mosca where you go and you sit in like these barber chairs and they do your makeup for you and your hair. And there are trained people that's what they do. It's like Wizard of Oz, rub, rub here, rub, rub there. It's like that. And you just feel like the Queen of England just sitting there. But he would go through the Mosca when he was there, and he'd go, too much rouge, it makes it not funny, not enough this. Like, he would literally control every detail. I remember someone at a rehearsal was supposed to burp, this loud comic burp, and this replacement actor couldn't quite get it, and Roman did it, and he's like, that's the way. And he would say, I will leave rehearsal if you don't give me what I want. Wow. Because he knew what he wanted, right. And to him it just seemed, this was also his first musical he had ever worked on.
Right.
And that's very, very different.
Yeah.
So I wasn't a principal. You know, one could feel like a bit of an extra, but what an honor. And then him coming back to see the show, I understudied one of the two dance soloists in the show, and he happened to be there one of the nights I was on. And I remember him coming backstage with his wife and one of his children afterward and walking through, and I just felt, I was like, that's him. And him saying something to me, and I couldn't understand what he said because I was so starstruck. And the stage manager, Dean, who was American, was standing next to him. He's like, yes, Andrew, Roman just said to you that you are a fantastic dancer. And I was like, oh, thank you. Thank you. And then he walked on. But he knew what he wanted, absolutely. And the show was beautiful. And unfortunately, they did it in New York. They did the show on Broadway, and I saw it. And it was nothing near his intent.
Right.
He actually, there was a character in the show of the head vampire's son who was, shall we say, homosexual. In that way. And he was... Yes, but the, right. The vampire was gay, but the vampire should not be effeminate. And Roman was there, and an understudy went on, and that didn't go well because the understudy played into the gayness of the character. And I remember perhaps not having seen that actor again after that evening, just because that wasn't true to his vision. And he had stated that, and we all knew that. And I don't know. I found safety in that, like, here are the parameters. Here are the rules. You are allowed to create. You should create. You should bring yourself to it. But there has to be a leader, and there has to be rules, and there has to be order, or else it's chaos.
It can be chaos. Yeah. I wish I had seen that. I mean, I wish I had seen you in that, too. It comes and goes.
Around the world, yeah.
I'm imagining Vampire Bat Out of Hell now.
right. Yeah.
I have a clip that I'll send to you later.
Thank you.
Of course.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, the hour always goes by way too quickly, but especially with my husband today, I could do another hour, of course. We officially became a couple. Was it 5 years later?
About 5 years, we were friends, and Michael was living in L.A., and I was living in New York. And sometimes he would come into New York for auditions, and after the audition, we would go eat lunch or something.
Mm-hmm. I remember we did that.
Being very fond of Michael.
Yeah.
And then, I'll take over, if you don't mind, Michael, for a minute.
Yes.
And then I was on the Mamma Mia, I opened the Mamma Mia USA tour. And Michael joined about a year in, and just such a feeling of excitement. Oh my God, Michael Grayman. It has to be the same Michael Grayman from West Side Story, and that I've auditioned with and been friends with. And it was, and we were pretty instantly a couple. And that was in 2003.
When I joined. That's right. When I joined, yeah.
2003.
Because we'll celebrate our 20th anniversary next May.
True.
What?
Yes.
And Mamma Mia was such a fun show to be a part of. What you started as a swing with Mamma Mia, and then what happened?
I was a swing, which means I covered all the male ensemble. There were seven, plus I understudied a principal role, so I covered eight roles. And then the dance captain, Rachel Rockwell, also rest in peace. Too many of those. She allowed me to be assistant dance captain when there were multiple people being put into the show. So I got to be assistant dance captain on occasion. And then she, when she left the tour, I was promoted to being dance captain on the tour. So I kept my swing and understudy jobs, and I became dance captain, which meant I was in charge of teaching and maintaining all of the choreography and musical staging of the show, which was most of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, 5 great years. I was on the tour for 4 years, 11 months.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's great. And
loved
it. And what a great show.
Yeah. Just happiness. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been great having you on the show today.
Thank you.
And we've got so much more we can up. I'll have you on again.
We need a part two.
No, we need a part two, right?
You cannot leave the listeners here.
I know, right? Should we have Sammy on next time we're here, or
maybe next year?
Thank you again. Happy Father's Day.
Of course, Happy Father's Day,
Fiona. Thank you for being with us here today.
Thank you, Fiona.
I've loved it. It was great seeing both of you.
We'll do it again.
Yes.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for joining us on Show People. I'll see you soon.